Okay, very good. Welcome to this first morning of this 9-day retreat. And again, even though you've had your first night's rest in your rooms, you always find, as I do when I go traveling, the first night in your room is never that comfortable. One of the reasons is it's because it's a new room, a new place, you're not really used to it yet. It takes a while for you to get psychologically adjusted to the new place you're sleeping. And you'll find the next night, or tonight, you'll sleep much better, the third night fine, and by the end of this retreat it's like your little house. It's yours. You've got to be comfortable in it. And it's because of experiences like that that I always started to apply that same psychology to meditation. I called it the three stages of meditation. The first one is recognition, then familiarity, then ease. You recognize that's your room, that's your bed, that's your pillow, that's your sheets. And after you recognize it, you become familiar with it, which means that you don't feel so psychologically tense in a new place, a new room. You recognize all the people who share your cottage. You recognize all their snoring. It's familiar now, which means that then you get used to it and you can relax, you can become at ease. The three stages which lead to recognition. Which lead to relaxation. Recognition, familiarity and ease. And I just brought that up because that's what's happening with your room. So even if you didn't sleep well last night, don't worry, you will sleep much better tonight and afterwards. I know that's very weird. In meditation retreats like this, that people say that when they go back to their room in the evening, they can't really sleep well. But then I notice that when they're meditating in here, they sleep very well. So the trick is when you in here, you've got your legs crossed or on a chair, please try to go to sleep in this room. And then you'll be far wide awake. When you go back to your room at night time, try to meditate as you're laying down. Then you go fast asleep. I wish it was that easy. But it's learning how to recognize, be familiar, and then become at ease. So even with the types of meditation I teach, it is a little method. It's always changed a little bit every year. And you recognized last night, and those of you who've been listening to me for the last couple of years, have noticed that I put more effort at the very beginning of getting people to relax their bodies, as I said last night, so they can get some understanding of what it means to let go. And, you know, sometimes during meditation I open my eyes and look at you guys, and sometimes you can see people, they're holding their body so tight. And you can see they're not even letting go of their body. How can they let go of their mind? So sometimes you see people getting very sloppy. And I think, now there's a good meditator. At least they know how to relax and let go. And, okay, I usually tell this story later on during the meditation retreat. It's a classic story from the suttas, from the word of the Buddha. So it gives it extra authority. The two monks, the Buddha was walking through the forest with his attendant, Ananda. There's another Ananda here, but he's not the attendant of the Buddha. Although he does make my breakfast in the morning, so he's almost qualified. But there was Ananda walking with the Buddha, and the Buddha saw this monk on the edge of the forest, sitting in what you might consider the perfect meditation posture. Full lotus, his back straight like a military officer, his left thumb touching the right thumb, not too much, in his lap. His chin tucked in slightly, not moving. Perfectly solid, strong and still. Meditating. And the Buddha took one look at that monk. And he turned around to his attendant Ananda and said, "I'm worried about him." And sure enough, 2 weeks later, that monk disrobed. Buddha's always right. And then the same journey through the forest, deep in the forest. There the Buddha saw another monk. And he was sitting there, a bit all over the place. And he was nodding this way, and nodding that way. His robe was almost coming off, as he was nodding backwards and forwards. And the Buddha turned to Ananda and smiled and said, I am not worried about him. And 2 weeks later, that monk became fully enlightened with all the psychic powers. So, seeing you last night and this morning, I expect many people to get psychic powers in their life. No, but sometimes you read a story like that, and it's the ones which don't make sense, which challenge the way you think things should be, which are the most interesting stories. Why? What's going on there? Did someone get it wrong? Because surely I thought as a young meditator that one who's really putting forth effort there is holding his back straight and just chin in and just not moving. That's the real meditator. The Buddha said, no, the one who was nodding all over the place. That was the real meditator. And why? And it's obviously because that first monk was the control freak monk. Each one of you, if you really had to, can sit perfectly straight, with no sloth and torpor at all, out of fear. If I changed traditions and became the Zen master with a big stick, I am sure that none of you will be sleeping at all. Because that happened to me once. I was on this Zen retreat when I was about 20, 21, because you didn't really have a choice in those days in England, because there wasn't really that many retreats of any type. So whatever retreat there was, it was Buddhist, I went on it. And so it was a Zen retreat, it was about 20 of us, and the master in the early morning came down the row with the stick. Anyone who was sleepy got whacked. But just to tell you how I overcame my sleepiness, I never got hit. The guy next to me did, and that was enough to overcome all my sleepiness. And I didn't overcome my sleepiness from wisdom or compassion. It was just out of fear. It really sounded like that hurt. I didn't want any of that. So I was bed straight. That's no way to overcome sloth and torpor or that type of thing. And you can understand that was what that first monk was doing, out of fear, out of pride, out of controlling. And you never get enlightened that way. And I did know a fellow monk, I still have his alms bowl, he gave it to me when he disrobed. He would never ever nod. He would always have perfect posture. Even when he sat, we had to sit up all night, once a week, meditating. He would never ever, his head would never bow. Perfectly straight. We all thought he was a great monk. When he did disrobe after 4 years, he told me and the others, he said it was so much pain of keeping that body so stiff for such a long time. And he said sometimes he would open his eyes and look at me, and I was nodding all over the place. And he had jealousy. If only I could do that, he thought. And to me that was really a moving experience and quite sad. He never knew how to let go. Out of pride, out of fear, he controlled his body, but it hurt so much. He couldn't stand it after a while. That's what happens if you try and do that. You lose after a while because you can't stand it anymore. But the second monk, at least he knew how to let go, to stop controlling, to stop doing things, and it's only a matter of time. And that's what it is, time. That his mind will actually regain its energy and he will become awake, alert, letting go, and very deep in meditation. I've already mentioned that tiredness is one of the biggest problems at the beginning of a retreat. How do you overcome that tiredness? Resting the body is one thing. But it's a waste of time resting the body if you can't rest the mind. You've got comfortable beds, nice blankets, pillows, It's reasonably quiet, but the thing in here is the noisiest of all people in this retreat. People can bang the doors in your cottage and get up in the middle of the night and make a cup of tea for themselves, and especially when they put milk and sugar in, ding, 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 in their cup. That only lasts a few seconds. But when you start thinking about it, who was that? Which one was it? I'm going to tell Ajahn Brahm, they can't do this. This is the only time I have to have a retreat. They should take people who don't know how to be mindful and get up in the early morning. They should stop them coming on this retreat. Or we should have soundproofing in all the cottages. Or we should let everybody have thermoses so they can make their own tea before they go to bed and they don't have to get up in the middle of the night. Or they can go to a special room, like somebody suggested, that all the snorers, we find out all the snorers, we put them all in the same cottage, you know, because after a while you can find out who's doing what, and then we can have, like, the snorers' cottage, just like you have, you know, smoking and not smoking, snoring and not snoring, and that means, and already the snoring has stopped a long time ago, but the thinking, that's gone on such a long time. That is the noise we try to overcome. So that first monk would not be able to overcome any noise. He's just so tense and tight. We want to get rid of everybody, everything which causes him problems. The second monk would just let go. And because he could let go, he could relax. Soon his mind became very peaceful. And of course, if you are tired, if you think a lot, the tiredness just gets worse and worse and worse. Because most of the energy, the reason why you're tired, is not the physical work you've done, but all the brain work you have done. That tires you more than anything else. So it says planning and doing and struggling and striving, all that work of your brain, that is what causes the tiredness. Which is one of the reasons why I'm trying to encourage you to just take it easy, relax, don't think too much. Relax, don't try too hard, that just makes your brain even more tired. And then you find after a little while, patience, it's just cause and effect. Because you're not doing much in your brain re-energizes. You feel like your brain is now working properly again. It's just been recharged. Through relaxation, peace and stillness. And for many of you, that is just a wonderful thing to realize. If you need to think about something, you can think very clearly. You don't waste time. Because how much time do you actually waste thinking? You never really get to a solution. You never really solve a problem. It just goes to the left, to the right, all over the place, back to where you started, but never really progresses anywhere. You're wasting so much time and so much energy. But instead, we learn how just to relax, be kind to our mind, let things be, and then you find because of that stillness, you get your mental energy back. And as I was saying, this thing called mindfulness now becomes strong. This thing called mindfulness, taught by the Buddha 26 centuries ago, it's been overemphasized these days. But nevertheless, it's a good thing that they're emphasizing some part of the Eightfold Path anyway. And when you emphasize the mindfulness, because it's taken away from everything else in Buddhism, they've only got a fraction of an idea of what mindfulness is in modern psychology or sociology, and where it's being used a lot. But one of the important parts of mindfulness, which very few people actually teach, but we know as Buddhist meditating teachers, is that your mindfulness increases. The more relaxed you are, the more still you are, the more peaceful you are. Then your mindfulness actually increases in its strength. So it's okay to say be mindful, to go and chew a raisin, or just to move your hands, or stroke your body, all these other little techniques. But that type of mindfulness and awareness is still very, very rudimentary, and it's not really good enough if you want to get some nice meditation going. It's a start, that's all. But you will find when you start to relax the body and relax the mind, don't do so much, don't struggle, don't strive. You are recharging your brain, which means that your mindfulness gets more energized, which means you can see more. You're more sensitive to what's going on inside, which means that when we do get to the breath meditation, it's easy to watch the breath, as I said last night. One of the biggest problems when people try and do breath meditation, they go to it far too quickly. They're not ready yet to watch the breath. It's just like Venerable Chaga here. You know, he was a painter before he became a monk. And he tells me, as all the other painters tell me, that to get a good painting job, 90% is preparation. To make sure that there's no grease or dirt on the surface, that it's not porous, that it's nice and flat, and then you get a good paint job done. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
There we go. The word from the master painter. And the same with meditation. If you don't get the surface right, it's a waste of time trying to meditate. You just go asleep, you get struggled, you get frustrated, you get disappointed. And I don't want that to happen to each one of you. Too many people say, oh, I can't meditate. I went on a retreat, it's really frustrating, I never get peaceful, I worry all over the place, I go crazy. I don't want that to happen. Because meditation is such a beautiful, joyful, profound thing to do. So, get the foundation right, first of all. Put more energy, more time, more focus on just relaxing your body and getting yourself well rested. So, you start off sleeping, sitting. Again, as I said last night, don't think that you have to sit on the floor to meditate. It's incredible how many people are like that. No, I don't want to be like these old namby-pamby cream puffs sitting in chairs. I'm going to sit on the floor. The Buddha sat on the floor and I'm going to sit on the floor. Only people who can endure a bit of discomfort and pain get enlightened. I am not going to be soft. I'm going to go for it. This is enlightenment or bust. In fact, the cushions, put aside the cushions. I'm going to sit on the bare wood. Put aside the wood. I'm going to get nails or broken glass. I'm going to be tough. Some people are like that. Honestly, they are. And that is real stupidity. We have chairs there. And I like telling people that when we built this place, we actually look for chairs specifically to meditate on. And finding ones which was the most comfortable. And these are the ones, when looking for many, many different chairs, these are the ones we came up with. And because sometimes that people just, you know, they sit on a chair and they move backwards and forwards, that's why we have the ones with the armrests on. So if you're someone who leans to the left and leans to the right, that stops you. For those people who really lean forward, we've got some seat belts for you to stop you falling off. They're comfortable and they allow meditation to be enjoyed by so many more people who just cannot sit on the floor. They've got sports accidents, motorbike accidents, other accidents, or just general old age, the accident of living too long, which means that you get sore here, sore there. So if you want to use those, please do so. The idea is just to get your body to be comfortable, to relax it. And if you don't know what I mean, every now and again, you have a look around and see what people are doing. You see that people just, you know, flicking their eyelids, and scratching their hands, moving their head down, scratching their nose, scratching their arms, scratching their hand again. And I'm just saying just what I'm seeing here. There's nothing wrong with this. This is just what we do all the time. You just look at a person and see just how much effort your body demands of you. Scratching this, coughing that, sneezing. And we take it for granted. You know, scratching your chin, moving your head, scratching your top of your lip. What I'm seeing right in front of me right now. Because we do this so often, we don't really notice it. That is just how demanding your body is. And just how wonderful it is when you can relax the body so much that it doesn't need an itch, doesn't need a scratch, doesn't need to cough anymore. So how do we do that? We make it comfortable as much as we can, first of all. by posture. And if you want to cough, cough. If you want to sneeze, sneeze. If you want to scratch, scratch. Don't try and control the body to begin with. Work with it. Be kind to it. And once you have adjusted your body, especially, I must say this, in every meditation retreat, coughing. If you want to cough, please do so as quickly as possible. Because if you don't, there is what I gave the name to in meditation, the volcano effect. Now a volcano is when the exit hole of the volcano gets plugged up. And you know what happens? It's the energy builds and builds and builds underneath the volcano until there's so much energy and force, the volcano erupts. And it's a big noise and lots of very toxic stuff is spread everywhere. And they have to evacuate villages 3-4 kilometers around. Now, that is so similar to the volcano effect in meditation. You want to cough. And instead of just coughing and getting it over and done, you think, no, I better not cough, I'll disturb people. So you plug it up. You resist it. And of course, you know what happens. The pressure builds and builds. It's going to blow. You know it's going to blow sooner or later. And when it does blow, then that's a huge noise. And even the monks can hear it over in Bodhinyana Monastery sometimes. That's an exaggeration, but it sounds good. And certainly, a lot of toxic stuff is spread around the people around you, which is not really healthy. Because instead of just a small cough, it's a big cough. And that's a problem. So, be kind to the body. And that's the best you can do for other people as well. So, relax in your body. I've been meditating for such a long time, even now when I sit down, I make sure my body is comfortable first of all. I close my eyes and I don't just start meditating on my breath straight away. I stay with my body for at least 5 minutes, making sure everything is comfortable. And I keep moving those first few minutes, because I found if I get my body really, really, really comfortable to begin with, I can sit for hours. But if I don't do it at the beginning, it's going to come back and bite me soon afterwards. Finding out the best posture. But that is not enough. Because just getting the best posture is only halfway, maybe a third of the way to a comfortable body. And it's then, as I was mentioning last night, I start focusing on parts of my body. Finding some part which is tense. Yeah, you know, it's like a, not really a headache, but my forebrow is a bit tense at this moment. So I can feel that. And that becomes the object of my meditation. That's what I'm looking at. That's what I'm mindful of. The most irritating part of my body, which at the moment, surprise, I just noticed this because I looked for it, you know, the top of my head. So once I can see that, feel that, then it's amazing just how you can relax it. It's just what I've learned over the years. It's a very simple technique to learn. When you find a part of the body which is tense, tired, irritating, just focus on it. Be mindful of it. And then you will notice sometimes that irritation gets worse, sometimes it gets more relaxed, more easy. And it doesn't take you to be an Einstein to realize that what actually makes it more relaxed is you just let it be, you let it go. You don't try and mess around with it, you don't try and control it, you don't do things with it, you just observe and just let it be. And then the whole thing gets less painful. It gets less intense. And that tells you, just the letting go relaxes even aches and pains in your own body. And after a little while, you can learn from this feedback, this cause and effect, trial and error, you see what's going on, you learn how to relax your own body. There's a monk at our monastery, it's a great little story, that he was always having trouble, I won't say who it is, always having trouble meditating, always having painful backs. So he went to go and see the doctor. And the doctor gave him an MRI scan. And when he came to listen to the results, the doctor said, "You have got a congenital defect in your spine. There's nothing we can do about it, no operations possible. All I can advise you is don't sit down on the floor. He said, but I'm a monk, I meditate. He said, well, it's going to be painful, there's nothing we can do about it. And so there he was, it's like a cook who wasn't allowed to eat. He was like a sailor who could never go on a boat. You know, it's like an IT expert who can't use a computer anymore. It's a monk who can't meditate. Rah! And so, you know, he was in a big trouble. Nothing a doctor could do about it, but he came across a little book which gave him the solution. And it's a great little solution. The book was telling him that either side of your spine there are muscles which you are not aware of at all. Because you don't have to be. And so the technique, the training was to become aware of those muscles either side of his spine. And the way he did this, he took his hand and just stroked them. And be as mindful, aware as possible as the feeling of his hand touching those muscles. Now anyone who's a neuroscientist knows that when you are aware of something, actually the brain makes a neural connection, the synapses connect. So after he was stroking the muscles on either side of his spine for long enough, he could actually feel those muscles without needing to touch them. He became aware of them. Like you can become aware of the muscles in your legs, in your nose, in your hands and arms obviously, but there's many muscles you just don't be aware of because you don't need to. Now he had to become aware of those, and that's how he got his awareness, by touch. Now it took him many, many weeks to do this, and to become aware of those muscles without even touching them. Now once he had awareness of those muscles, again it was trial and error, how he could stretch those muscles, relax them, stretch, relax, stretch, relax, to actually move them. When I was a kid, on TV, and this was 45 years ago, you saw this crazy guy on the TV, and you know he'd be bare-chested, and he'd move all his muscles on his, one breast muscle up and down another, and his tummy up and down. It was really gross, but you know, really amusing as well. I don't know if you've ever seen somebody like that. They could move all his muscles in his chest to music, and it was really gross, but you know, just fascinating. And how could he actually do that? Because he trained too to become aware of all these different muscles which you and I just, you know, they're there, but we can't actually do anything about because we haven't trained. And that's exactly what he'd done through mindfulness of those muscles. That's how he got mindfulness going. And bit of trial and error, he'd just find out he thought this or he had this attitude of mind. And yeah, it stretched. The mindfulness gave him feedback. This is the more important part of mindfulness, which I always stress. Feedback. So you're aware and you watch how things change. So you learn how to move it this way, how to move it that way, by a bit of trial and error. So this monk, he learned how to stretch and relax his muscles, stretch, relax them, stretch, relax them. He learned how to exercise them. And he used to exercise them every day until those muscles are now so strong, way stronger than the same muscles in your back and my back, they're so strong they fully compensate for the weakness of the spine. Problem solved. To exercise muscles which normally you don't have to really worry about. And that's how he did it. And that's how he overcame that problem. This is an example of what I mean about mindfulness and trial and error, feedback, so you can learn how these muscles work and how to strengthen this, relax that. And of course, if I have a band of tension around the top of my head, I can actually feel that and I can trial and error, I know how to get that feeling to get less and less and less and less and less. And so if I wasn't talking, I could just relax that completely away. And of course, you know, I've done that many, many times in that latest book, The Good, Bad, Who Knows book, I told how, you know, I overcame the food poisoning. The same method, just relaxing my guts until all the pain, which was considerable, totally vanished. You've done that to many other things as well. I was a few weeks ago giving a talk, was it here or somewhere, and I had a sort of some hay fever or a cold, didn't know which it was, and I started to sneeze and had to give a talk. I said, just hold on a moment, I'm just going to focus on my nose. And I just sort of relaxed it all away, so no more sneezing. It's a wonderful thing you can do this way. You can actually have much better skill with your body and how to work with it. And in particularly here, you can really learn how to relax. Relax deeply. So anyone who really does have trouble sleeping at night, you're laying in your bed. What part of the body is tense? What part is relaxed? Find that part of your body which is the most irritating. That's usually the part which is stopping you going to sleep. Be aware of it. And use your trial and error to find out how to relax it. How to make that tension, that ache, that pain get less and less and less and less and less and less. So if it's your head is just so relaxed. And at least you know what relaxation is. I think everybody, there's a few exceptions, you know, you've had times of relaxation, you know what it is, so you know what I'm talking about. Parts of the body feel so loose and so at ease. Just like I remember just when I was a kid, you used to go walking back from school in the snow sometimes, and your feet, you know, get all snow and slush inside of them. And your mother would get this big bowl of hot water, you'd soak your feet afterwards. Oh, that was so nice. You know, almost freezing feet, soaked in hot water. Oh, that was really good. Or if you've been on a long walk, the same. Or someone gives you a massage, you'll really relax. Now, you know what that feeling is like. And that's what you engender just in your mindful letting go bodily relaxation. And you really relax a lot. So you can do that when you go to bed. So you're laying back there, not going to sleep. What part of my body is tense? It may be your legs. You can feel those legs. Yeah, I can feel the tightness, the tension there. What makes it worse? What makes it better? Find out, just letting it go. Being kind. Opening things out. Not squashing them through fear. And then you can actually learn how just to relax your own muscles. Just one part of the body. Until you get the feedback, that muscle is just so relaxed, like it has been soaking in a bath. You may have some indigestion. You feel just the tightness or the heat in your intestines. Feel it. Notice how it changes. That's the mindfulness. And then after a while you can relax, 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 relax it, and it's gone. Many people have irritable bowel syndrome, IBS. It can be overcome with this method. Be aware of that. Notice that feeling. What makes it worse? What makes it better? Until you can relax it. Relax it, relax it. Obviously it's a skill which you have to learn, but after a while you can relax almost anything and have this body very, very, very healthy. And I think, where was she? She got this email from someone. She sent it on to me. This lady, I think she was over in Europe somewhere, arthritis, chronic arthritis, having to take all these steroids and other really strong drugs to try and cope with the enormous pain. She's an elderly lady, and she wrote this brilliant letter back to me saying, followed your advice, followed your technique, no more medication, no more pain, arthritis gone. Thank you so much. And that's actually quite something to get rid of arthritis, which is supposed to be there forever, and just take drugs just to cope, not to overcome it. But it actually works. Had some great, great results from this. Oh, there's Burr over there in the green shirt. Was it from Europe, wasn't it, that lady? I think you sent it to me, or someone did. Anyway, it's a great little story about how she overcame her arthritis, and she just sent the email to say thank you. So this is how you can relax, 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 relax the body. So, for the first day, basically that's what I would really love you all to do. So aware of your body, you keep relaxing it, relaxing, relaxing it, until your body feels really at ease. Then you find you won't need so much sleep, because the body, psychologically, even subconsciously, dealing with the tightness and tension in the body, takes up so much of your mental energy. Stops you being able to sit for long periods of time. Causes so much restlessness, inability to sleep, inability just to be here. Sometimes you wonder why it is that you have to keep thinking and running off, because the body is not at ease, it's painful. So one also of the reasons why I often wondered why the Buddha always said that the first thing we should always be aware of is kayagata sati, mindfulness of the body. Mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of the body. So, I know my body, I just want to go into the higher stuff. No, do the preparation well. Be aware of your body. And it's also the case, any of you have emotional problems, scars, difficulties in your life. Like many people say, much of that emotional wounds are actually carried in your body, associated with tightness, tension, somewhere in your body. And so when you learn how to relax the body, there is almost like the free gift in the cornflakes packet, you know, the extra benefit, the side effect, is as your body relaxes, a lot of the emotional baggage also disappears as well. You're free and at ease. So your body gets really well prepared. And I know if I'm going to get into some nice meditation, my body has to be so relaxed, so at ease. You're sitting here and look through the body, there's not a tightness of tension anywhere in that body. Feel really, really good. And of course, that's great for your health. I don't know why actually people, I don't know if there's any doctors here, why you really have to go to a doctor to find out what's wrong with you. Can't you know that yourself? You are much closer to your body than any doctor is. They can do an MRI scan, but can't you do a mindfulness scan of your body and just actually find out what's going on in there? I think the only reason why you do have to have doctors and diagnosis and all these machines is people are so unmindful of their body, so out of touch with it, they do need these machines to tell them what they should really know themselves. So that's one enormous benefit. When you are really aware of your body, you know what's going on. Really, very deeply, profoundly. And also you know how to deal with it. So it'll save a lot of problems by going to see doctors. But a lot of doctors out of work. Many doctors say, I'm sorry about that, but you have plenty of work as it is already. There's enough crazy people out there. So I'm not really sort of causing you any problem for your career. But certainly when you learn how to relax your own body, the body gets so loose, so easy. Rest well, eat well, and enjoy the day. But it's also, as I mentioned last night, it's also you're learning the skills of what you need to do to relax the mind. If you play tennis or cricket or soccer, you go to the gym, first of all. Going to the gym is not playing tennis. Lifting weights is nothing to do with kicking a ball. But you do that because the skills you learn in the gym, they're the ones you're going to use in the field when you're playing your sport. So by learning how to relax your body, that is your first gym. You're learning the skills of mindfulness, letting go, patience, because it takes a long time. Those skills, patience, letting go, kindness, mindfulness, are the skills which you're going to really have to use later on to be able to do things like watch your breath, watch these beautiful lights in the mind, or even get into these jhanas. You've got to really learn how to relax. So we start on our body. And we don't go too far. I know many of you, I've been meditating for years, I don't want to need this, I want to get into the real stuff. Be careful, be patient. Go back to square one. Make that very strong. Because once the foundation is really, really tight, strong, really powerful, then the rest is just so easy. You don't have any problems later on. So you're learning your mindfulness and letting go. Enough to really relax the body. And of course, I mentioned last night, but I'm redoing a lot of what I said last night for the reason that last night many of you were tired. I don't know how much really went in. But one of the great things about this is you start to learn about this meditation is about happiness, joy. Again, when I went to a meditation retreat, the Zen retreat, you're not supposed to smile at all, otherwise you get whacked. Just vipassana. Wipe that smile off your face. Just be mindful. And there's just no joy at all. And to me, that was not how I grew up in the great meditation teachings in Thailand. And it's not what I saw when I read the Buddha's teachings as well. There is, sometimes that you have to justify what you say because so many teachers teach so many different things, and you wonder who's right and who's wrong. So you go back to some of the teachings in the time of the Buddha, and there's one particular teaching which I have to cite every time just to show you that what I'm saying is accurate to the path of Buddhism. The Dhamma Chaitya Sutta, monuments to the Dhamma, where King Prasenadi, one of the Buddha's chief supporters, came to see the Buddha for the last time. And as he went into the monastery, he went to see the Buddha, and during the conversation the Buddha asked the king, "Why do you like coming here so often?" And there the king replied, "Because every time I come into this monastery, the monks are always smiling and happy," said the king. It was like a snapshot of what it was like to visit monasteries in the time of the Buddha. The monks were smiling and happy. And the Buddha replied, it's a wonderful confirmation, "Yes, that is what you can expect when the monks are meditating and gaining insights." That's powerful. So that's how I can see whether you are meditating and getting insights. If you're smiling and happy, if you're miserable and upset and angry, forget it. You've lost the path. And when you see that in the suttas, that really hits you. Wow. That's actually describing what it was like to visit places where the Buddha was teaching 2600 years ago. The monks weren't serious. The monks were fierce and scolding you. The monks were kind, smiling and happy. So that happiness in meditation, the happiness in the path, is something which I've spent a lot of time arguing for, encouraging and also justifying. And of course, you start with a happy body. A body which is relaxed, at ease. Because so many people, their body is so tight, so controlled, so, even see the way that people wear their clothes. You know, the clothes are so tight. High heels, you know, tight skirts. Guys with suits, which almost, they must throttle you with the ties. Why do you do that for? Oh, it's because it's fashion, it's what we're supposed to do. But can't you feel just so, like a sausage all bound up? So that's how people's bodies are. Even they're not wearing those clothes, sometimes they're just so tight. Even watch the way people walk. They're not relaxed. They don't just stride and dance. They just almost like, you know, goose-stepping, like in the Nazi military. So when the body learns how to relax, you can watch it, they just flow. And everything gets so easy when the body's relaxed. I just remember this story this builder told me, because I had a lot to do with building. And this building, I was on a job in a really, really expensive part of Sydney, I think Double Bay somewhere, building a mansion for some mega-rich multi-millionaire. And that the guy said, "This is my mansion, I'm only going to do it once, I want to do it really, really well. I don't care how much it costs, I want the very best tradespeople, the top ones. I don't want any sort of learners or apprentices, I want the ones who really are the best in their field, I don't care how much you pay them." And so when he came to see his project one day, he saw this young 17-year-old laying bricks on his mansion. He exploded. He told the builder, "Didn't I tell you I want the very best? Not apprentices, not young guys just learning their trade. Get rid of him." And the builder just, "Come and have a look at this guy. He's only about 17. But this, the way that he was just effortlessly laying bricks, there's a little bit of more to the brick on, tap it down, the next one. He was just so effortless, it looked like he wasn't working at all. And he got perfect bricks laid one after the other. And the Buddha said, "This is, he's only 17, but he's so incredibly good. That's why he's on your job." And the rich guy sort of looked at him and said, "Wow, incredible, you're right." He was flowing, effortless, totally relaxed. And that's why even laying bricks was just so beautiful and so wonderful. It's the same with your people, whatever you do. Whether it's typing a letter, if you're really tense, of course you mess up. If you're really relaxed, typing this letter and that letter, it goes pretty perfectly. Just like if you're playing guitar or a piano, if you're really tight and tense and worried and afraid, of course you mess up. But if it relaxes, you have a really easy time. And you do it well. The happiness of the body means you can do everything well. Even meditation. Even cleaning your room. Even chopping the vegetables. Chop, 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 chop. It all gets done so quickly and so much fun. So the happiness is important. And of course, when you relax the body is happy. You're learning how to have a happy body. And once you learn about the importance of happiness from the very, very beginning, mindfulness increases the energy, increases the happiness. You learn a lot about Four Noble Truths, suffering in the body. And suffering, starting off with just the body, first of all. Learn how to have a happy, relaxed, healthy body. It's happy. You can smile easily. You don't have so many furrows in your and lines, worry lines all over your face. You don't need to use makeup. Ajahn Brahm never uses makeup. You don't need to. But when you relax your body, it becomes very happy. And it's teaching you some important Dhamma. You relax, things flow smoothly. Whatever you do in life, you do so quickly, so beautifully, high quality, no effort. It's teaching you what's going to happen next. Preparation. If you can do that now, first with your body and then do it later with your mind. It's so easy to get happiness up in the meditation. You can flow so easily through all the stages of meditation. You can just let go. You don't force it anymore. I know sometimes, you know, the nuns, monks have to do chanting. Have you ever tried to sort of really do the chanting as best you possibly can? And it all stuffs up. Just do it, however it is fine. And then it flows really smoothly without any mistakes. That's one of the problems. When you try, that's when you fail. When you let go, more than often than not, you succeed. So this is actually what we're learning here. First with the body, and then we go on with our mind. And that will be coming tomorrow. Once you've relaxed your body, then you try and relax the mind. Part of relaxing the body also the first day, exploring the site. If you haven't done so already, go for some walks. It's pretty beautiful time of the year. It's not too hot. I don't know what the temperature is today, but last week was absolutely gorgeous, especially in the afternoon. If it's really hot during the daytime, you can have a walk, you know, later on in the afternoon and the evening. Just for the purpose of exercising your body and just relaxing. And when you are walking, just for relaxation, have this wonderful idea of, I don't know where I'm going. Just walk and see what happens. You can't really get lost. Just don't go over any fences or through any gates. We're told this to the Singaporeans who come every sort of October, and they're really hopeless. I think it's because in Singapore you have to follow orders. It's such a controlled state. So as soon as they get out of the borders of Singapore, they will not follow any order whatsoever. Just a reaction. And it's only just, you know, it's happened twice. You know, a neighbor's property up there, it's a house. And they've got lost there. Oh, we're lost, we don't know how to get back. And the neighbor, he's really nice. He thinks this is really, really funny. Because it's only about 10 minutes walk away. But you don't know how to get there, so he always drives you back again. You can get lost. But anyway, so just have a nice explore. See what you can find. And if you see any monks' huts, keep away from the monks' huts, because there was a, where was she now? The nun who went to see There's a monk who lives in this place as well, and he was meditating, and then this nun came along and just looked through his window. And he said, "Wow, what are you doing? I'm supposed to be meditating. I'm just exploring." So keep away from that monk's huts and stuff. And that means you can just open up, relax a little bit, which is important for the first part of this retreat. And if you want to sort of exercise your body just through doing the walking meditation, that is also excellent at the beginning. I'm not going to tell you how to do walking meditation yet. Do you know how to walk? It's ridiculous. I'm teaching you how to walk. You should know that already. You've been doing it for such a long time. But one important thing to point out about the walking meditation, which is one of its most profound aspects of walking meditation, you start at one end, you walk to the other end, you turn around, you go back again. You end up where you started. You don't get anywhere, which is one of the most wonderful things about this retreat. You're not going to get anywhere. Isn't that amazing? Because most people do something to get somewhere. You go to work to get some money. You get married to get some kids. You get rid of the kids to have some peace at last. You're always doing things to get something. Now, here, we're doing things not to get anything at all. Just walking up to the end, walking back. Why should I do this? Oh, no reason. Just to walk, that's all. Can't you keep it simple? Why in your whole life do you always have to do something for a reason? To get something out of it. To get somewhere. To improve yourself. As I say, always improving business. Totally ridiculous. Somebody sent me a nice little cartoon. If I can still find it, I'll print it out and put it on the board for you. It's one of the best cartoons I've seen in a long time. This poor guy, middle-aged guy, usual guy you see in our modern world, maybe 50. And the book was How to Be Happy, or The Secret of Happiness or something, on the outside. He bought it, he opened up, and the first page he said, to be happy is impossible. And then he closed the book, and then with a big smile he hugged his book. Happy at last. Isn't it wonderful? So enlightenment is impossible. Now I'm enlightened. So stop doing something to get somewhere, okay? Just learn how to be here, I said yesterday. Just enjoy this day and put lots of fun into what you're doing. Now, I should have mentioned last night, we're supposed to keep, quiet, don't talk and be as silent as you possibly can. Which is great. You don't need to talk to people. You've had the first day to sort of say hello. If it's really necessary, yes, you can speak. Because some people take this noble silence as if it's just absolute and you can't speak for any reason whatsoever. Which means that there's a snake. It's absolutely stupid. If there's a snake, say there's a snake over there, please. So it's not noble stupidity. It's noble silence. So if you need to say something, it's fire, fire. Just say it's a fire. Don't go whoosh, whoosh. So just say fire. So keep it sensible. But also, you don't need to have any conversations. You don't need to say good morning or good night or whatever. You know it's morning time, you know it's night time. So why do you have to say that to other people? If someone to say, say it. If it's not, shut up. And if somebody talks to you and you want to try and keep noble silence, you don't tell them, be quiet, otherwise you've just broken your silence too. So in Australia we've got something called the one finger sign. You know the one finger sign? Give them the finger. Exactly. That's the one finger sign here. Not the other one finger sign. This one finger sign. So you can always say that to people, and that's nice. But even though you shouldn't be talking to one another, even in your cottages, because that disturbs other people, please smile at one another. A little smile is not breaking noble silence. A And sometimes that's all a person needs, you know, the social cohesion, a little smile in the morning. And that actually just lifts people up. And it also is a sign that your meditation is going okay. So you can smile at any time of the day. And it's not against the rules. But try not to talk so much. This is like body language. Nice smile. Walking slowly, softly. And the last thing, just about silence, is that in your hearts, there's six rooms. I try to make them, when we design them, as quiet as possible. There's always some noise somewhere. You can't avoid that. But try to limit it as best you possibly can. So, we have what we call the burglar mindfulness practice. Because burglars are very, very mindful. They can sneak into a person's house without you hearing them. They can open the door so slowly and quietly and open it and you don't hear a thing. Burglars can do that. Meditators? No way. Bang, bang, crash. So if burglars can do that, can't you do that as well? So for the first few days, when you go into your cottage, before you even open the door, imagine you're a burglar. Imagine it. And if you make any noise, they're going to call the police. You're going to get arrested. You're going to go to jail. And if you really have to, you can open the front door absolutely silently and close it silently. You can go into your own cottage without making any noise whatsoever. You can be a burglar. And if the very least, when you leave here, because many people are losing their jobs in today's economy, at least you'll have a profession. After you leave this place. That's only a joke, by the way. So, but at least you can learn how to be mindful. And sometimes people keep complaining, or people get up in the middle of the night to use the toilet. And in some places, if you turn on the light, you also turn on the fan. So use a flashlight. You don't need to look at much when you go into the toilet. We've done it many years. You can probably do it in the dark if you really want to. You know, you just feel your way around, be mindful. So use a flashlight instead of turning on the lights. And also, you don't need to flush the toilet, wake everybody up. You can leave that until the morning time. Saves water. What was the old saying? If it's yellow, let it mellow. If it's brown, flush it down. But, you know, sometimes you don't even need to flush it down. You can leave it to get a bit more brown later on in the morning. But whatever, you can learn how to be quiet. And if you have to have a cup of tea early in the morning or in the middle of the night, I think there's a few thermoses around, if you can find one of those thermoses, and just boil the water up before you go to bed so it's in the thermos so you don't need to boil it up when you first wake in the morning. Because sometimes a kettle can wake people up. And that means that you can look after everybody in the cottage. So you can be so quiet. That's compassion, and it's also mindfulness, noble silence. If you can do that, that is a huge boost to your meditation, because you're learning how to be careful and caring for all the people who you live with. So that when you get to watch your mind, you can be careful and caring to your mind. And your mind loves you for that. Just like the fellow people in the cottage love you for that. So just very much basics of meditation. Don't think this is all you're getting. You're going to get much deeper stuff afterwards, but I'm just keeping it at this level to begin with. Mindfulness of the body. Relaxing the body. Being silent. Even watching the way you walk. Even watching the way when you go into one of the public toilets. As a monk, we always have to cough before we go into the toilet, in case somebody's inside. You don't just quickly open the door and find someone with their trousers down. That is not very funny. So be very mindful, very kind, sensitive. And that's not just the rules, that's actually learning the training from which you can really go off into some very powerful deep meditation. So, that is the little talk for this morning, just an hour. So, any questions, please, there's papers already out there. in the lobby area. You can write your questions down on pieces of paper and we'll answer them at 8 o'clock this evening for the Q&A session. No interviews today. Interviews will start tomorrow. So if you want to take a rest, you can take a rest, meditate, go for a walk. Just learn how just to relax the body. That's your job for today. Sadhu. 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 Very good. So have a pleasant day. And there will be no bells or gongs for lunch. You don't need a bell or a gong for lunch. People have missed the morning meditations. They miss the chanting. They miss the talks. But I've never known anyone miss lunch. You'll find it somehow.